Greetings tonight. What a good beginning we had for the evening, Ambassadors for Christ, which is basically, I guess, in a nutshell, what the mission conference is all about, is reminding us or instructing us or thinking about the fact that we are ambassadors for Christ. It's good to see you young folks here tonight, some that aren't so young. As we see you here, we think and realize and know that you're the future church. You're the next phase, the next generation coming on. And we certainly hope and want to do our part, praying God will do the rest in inspiring all of us for his work and for what it means to be an ambassador for Christ. I guess the first topic, the way I got the title, was the importance of a missionary worldview, what we do or who we are. Importance of a missionary worldview. And in order to look at that, I want to look at the Good Samaritan. If you want to turn to Luke 10, we're going to be reading that passage as a starter here this evening. But really, why should I care? And why should you care? And do you care? Why would I put any effort into anything except myself? Is there a reason? Is it an obligation somehow, if we're going to be Christians, we have to do something for God? Why would I put any effort into the missionary idea? I used the illustration before, and I'm going to use it again. You know, when a baby's born, it's a receiver. It takes. It has to. Has no choice. It's a receiver, a taker. And because of that, the child grows, and there comes a day when that child becomes a giver. It's no longer receiving from others. It now gives to others. And the Christian life is the same way. We're born into God's family, and in the beginning, we're takers. We're receivers. We have received salvation. We receive instruction, and we begin to grow. Paul talks about meat and milk. So we start out in the milk stage. And he says, you're not ready for meat yet. And that's true of babies too. But you know, as you put a few years behind you in the Christian life, and most of you, I'm assuming, have a number of years behind you in the Christian life, there comes a time when we need to be givers and not just receivers. Does that make any sense? We are no longer just receiving the good things of the church and God, but we have received instruction, and now as an ambassador, we start giving. We start giving. We have to be a giver in order to mature and really find our place in the kingdom and in God's work. We have to be a giver. We have to focus not on ourselves, but on God's work. And that's what I want to challenge you to these next several evenings. Because if there is no concept of giving, there's no thought in your mind or room for the idea to be a giver, these messages are really going to be dry and worthless. If the only important thing in life is what I can get out of it and spend my money for me doing the things that I want to do, living where I want to and doing what I want to, what's a missionary? We have to be givers. I want to challenge you to be a giver and to think about giving. Giving so others can share the blessings that you have already enjoyed as a child of God and the blessings you will continue to enjoy for your entire life. So it is important that we have a worldview as a missionary. A few of the subjects that I want to challenge us with tonight and challenge myself again is, number one, how I view the world. How I view the world. how I view our church, more specifically, us as Mennonites, how I view my abilities and resources, understand, with the power of God and God's blessings, alone we are nothing, and how I view God's calling. Is there a calling? Do I have a calling? Do you have a calling? Do only special people have callings, and the rest of us, until we have a calling, will wait? And one more really important one. Do I love? Do I love? Not just my family, not just my friends. Do I really love people? Do I love people in general, everybody? That will affect your view of how you're going to be an ambassador for Christ, or if you should be an ambassador for Christ. Yes, we should be, but are we? Do I love? The answers to these questions will determine my physical action and my financial action. Sometimes it's easier to give. Sometimes we need to go. But we always need to be ready to open our mouth and speak for the Lord. We always need to be ready to live a life that would draw other people to Him, no matter where we live. How do we go about to sell something? There's a basic concept in selling that says, I have what you need. I have what would be good for you, and I'm offering it for sale. If we don't believe that we have and they need, where's the missionary spirit? What is our concept? Why would we try to do anything? Who's a missionary? So we have to realize, first of all, the great gift that we have, what we have experienced and what we're going through and where we'll be when we pass out of this life. And then I have to give to you because I love you, and that's the whole world. You need, I have. And no, we don't sell it. It's for free. The term missionary, according to my research, means a person undertaking a mission, in other words, a goal, especially religious. If you say missionary, most people link it to a church activity. Supposedly, the term wasn't first used or recorded as being used until 1625. My thought was, what were they called before that? What were missionaries before 1625? Maybe they were just Christians. Maybe a true Christian is always a missionary. I think so. Let's never forget. I think we're all missionaries, some in one way, some in another way. And whether we call it missionary or we're just a Christian, I guess the meaning could and should be the same. So the importance of a missionary worldview, what we do or who we are, what's God's worldview of missionary and missions? God must have ideas about all these weighty subjects we want to discuss and talk about. And what does God think? Well, it's because of Him that we talk about this, and it's because of Him that we feel a compelling to go and do and be. If God so loved the world that He gave His only Son, we know what His worldview is of missions. He loved the world. He still loves the world. And He's reaching out to them. And that's our job as ambassadors, to bring them, not to us, but to God. Jesus reinforced that. His worldview is the same. And as He said, I send you into the world. Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end. So we're not alone. Luke 10:30, if you have turned to Luke 10, let's start at verse 30. Well-known passage, as most of our New Testament passages are. Let's quickly read a few verses here to give us a little bit of a basis for an example. And Jesus answering said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. And went to him, and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, gave them to the host, and said unto him, Take care of him, whatsoever. So what's our worldview? Is it all about me and my life and what I'm going to do with my money? Or is it about a needy world? Now let's go back to our subject. What is my worldview? This is the first one. How do I view the world? How we view the world is going to determine what level of urgency I feel toward helping them. Are most of them saved? Most of them have a religion and believe in God or a God. And they have their culture and they have their religion. I have mine. Or do I believe that most of this world has a false religion of one kind or another, or a seriously deteriorated Christianity that has lost the power? I believe that. I personally believe that. Most of them are either in false religion or have a seriously deteriorated Christianity that is not filling their needs and will not carry them through. Matthew 7, few there be that find it. If Jesus tells me that there are few of the many in this world that find it the right way, I have to believe that few means few. And we're sent out there to help those few and to help a few more become the few. Yes, everyone if we can, but we know we can't. Sometimes the prospect is so overwhelming, and where would I start? What would I do? The tendency can be to do nothing. That's a mistake. Every worker can do something, and every worker should do something. Maybe we won't bring thousands into the church, but we might help some person who helps other people who help other people, and we don't know how far that ripple will go in the pond of eternity. So don't despair. Even helping one person is worth it. 1 John 5:19 tells us the whole world lies in wickedness, but we know that we have or are with the right one, putting it into my own words. The whole world lies in wickedness. That's why they need the light. So when I look at the world, and as we identify the world, I'm going to say we identify the world as being anyone outside of true Christianity who is not walking the walk. As I view the world, if we have a heart of compassion and love, we see the need. It doesn't have to be explained to us a lot farther. We see the need. We have to believe that every person is created in the image of God, and that of one blood he has made all nations. And all have turned down the wrong path. And all will stand in judgment, including me. That paints a dark picture. It paints a dark picture. But it is dark, and it is black out there. And that's exactly why we are supposed to be lights shining on the hill. Why we're supposed to let our light shine so that all may see. Because they need it. And they're not looking toward Jesus the way they should. John 3:36. We either have life, or it says the wrath of God is abiding on him, on us, on people. We either have Jesus Christ for real, or the wrath of God abides on us. Yes, there's a lot of churches out there. Yes, there's a lot of people that profess Christianity and profess God. And no, I will never say they are all lost. Never. I don't believe that. But I do believe that there are many people, like Titus 1:16 says, they profess they know God, but in works they deny him. Not all of them, but lots of them profess God, but in works they deny him. And Timothy 3:5, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. And then what does he say? From such turn away. Not in a sense that we don't be the shining light for them, but in the sense that we cannot walk the path and call them brothers. A form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. The power to live a godly life. You know, what Jesus told us is still true. By their fruit you will know them. Not by their words, not by their teachings, not by the official church doctrines. By their works, you will know a true Christian. So how do I view the world? How did the Samaritan view the world? Hurting. In need. And that's how we need to view the world. That can be my next door neighbor. That can be Kenya. That can be anywhere. It is everywhere. So then, how do I view the church? How did the Good Samaritan view the inn? A safe place? A good place? A wonderful place to take this individual off of the beaten path, where there was misery and hurt and damage, and a safe haven to help him into, where he would be taken care of and where he could come back to health and where he could live and go on with life. How do I view the church? I view the church, yes, it's the bride of Christ. It is the group I have to be part of. And it's not only about how do I want to say this? It's more than just being there so we get there. You know what I mean? It's not just about, well, you have to be part of the church because finally we do want to be saved in the end. But it provides so much now in my life and in my walk of life and for my family and for us. It provides so much now that it gives a fulfilling life from now until the point of death and moving on. And then, of course, we will all be reunited in a glorious church that is truly, truly united with God. So how do I view the church here and now? I see it as the tool that brings people to a knowledge of salvation. Only God saves. Only the blood of Jesus Christ finally cleanses us. But the church working as a body brings knowledge and brings us to God. And if we can get a sinner, a worldling, if you will, we were all worldlings, as we can help anyone, everyone, to the church, the teachings of the church, the practices of the church, to where they will see God. We are bringing them into a haven, a place of rest, a place of growth. I see the church as a basis for stability in my life. A group that will tap me on the shoulder if I start veering to the left or to the right. A group of believers that cares what I do and is concerned about me, will pray for me, and yes, correct me if I need it, when I need it. gives me direction, gives me stability. I recently read about a lottery winner. This was 10 years ago when he won. At that time, it was the largest lottery, I think, that had ever been dealt out. And overnight, he became extremely rich. And it looked like he was starting out pretty good. First thing he did was donate, I think, close to 10% of it to three different churches. And some of those, I think, built new buildings and etc. But you know, as this individual lived for himself and was the boss of his own life and made his own decisions, not under a church, but his decisions, he began to deteriorate. He spent on himself, vehicles, whatever, lifestyle went that way. His one and only granddaughter that he was going to leave everything to her, he began to hand her huge amounts of cash. It ruined her. In the end, well, his end isn't yet. Maybe it'll turn around. But for his granddaughter, it's too late. She ended up doing drugs, overdosing, killing herself. His wife left him. And you just see a big picture of a man living to himself without any stability. And the church helps and keeps us stable. If I just lived any way I wanted to, I would not be a stable individual. Neither would you. But it's a group working together that helps us stay focused on Christ. It's part of Christ's design that we rely on and help the church. Together, we can stand. It's the home team. It's the group I'm a part of. It's where we need to bring other hurting souls to a place of stability, a place of safety, a place of growth. If I don't view the church as that, why would I bring anyone to it or offer it to anyone? If the Good Samaritan didn't think that the inn was the place to take him, he wouldn't have taken him there. What would he have done with this hurting individual? Patched him up a little bit and left him lay there in the ditch? That's not long-term helping the man. No, we can't get everybody into the church. And sometimes we simply help people where they are. They have to finally agree to do whatever they're going to do. And sometimes we help them where they are, and we let God to help them further because we've done what we could. I suppose that individual could have left the inn as soon as he was well enough, walked back out into the world, and gotten beaten up all over again and maybe killed. But the Good Samaritan did his job when it was time and what he could. He did what he could. The other two individuals aren't clear because that man died in the end, if he did, at the hands of other thieves. Those two individuals are not clear that walked by and left him lay there the first time. They didn't help when they could. They didn't do what they could. The church is a place, our Mennonite church, is a place that practices and teaches non-resistance. Some of you are taking that in class. Many churches don't have much to say about that subject, and we consider it a basic teaching of Jesus Christ. Our church promotes and teaches peace at home. When nominal Christianity has a 50% divorce rate, right along with non-believers in America today, think about it. Our church is still teaching and insisting on unified marriages, peace and love at home. You don't find that everywhere. You almost don't find that anywhere. And as I meet people that have gone through that system, whose parents were divorced, and who are divorced themselves, it's painful. It's a torn up life for them, and it it's painful to hear them talk about it. I'm a part-time prison chaplain there at Farmington. I get into the prison there about twice a month. I'm in there on a Monday. And I hear some stories. I get to talk to some of the prisoners, some of the ones that come into the chapel, and if they want to talk, I'm there. Some don't have anything to say to me, and some can be drawn out into conversation. I just had a conversation with one of them, and it was such a... I asked him about his family. It was right before Christmas time. I asked him, I guess, if any of his family was coming to see him, and I guess he didn't think they were. He said he really doesn't have much family. But slowly, he began to talk about what consisted of his family. He was divorced. And his parents, at his father's funeral, his mother discovered that, he discovered that he had two half-sisters that showed up at the funeral, and that was an eye-opener for his mom. She had no idea they existed. And I guess his mother went on to marry another man, and... He only had one or two siblings and didn't seem to be very close to them. His wife married someone else. Now those children are being taken out of the home because of a bad situation. He's in prison and hasn't mentioned why. But most of the prisoners there in that prison, about 70 to 80% of them are there because of their sexual offenders, one way or another. And as I listened to his fragmented family of ex this and ex that and divorce here and divorce there, it was just such a picture of destruction. Anything but loving relationships. We're thankful that God still loves him, regardless of all that. And I believe he talks about finding faith. And I believe he's a different man today than he was at one time. And I hope God continues to draw him closer. But do you value the teachings of your church? And not only the teachings, many churches have the teachings, but the practice of your church, the insistence of your church that these things are done. It's a gift we can almost not appreciate enough. A lot of the prisoners that I meet come out of and have had divorced parents, and many of them are divorced too. Most of them did not have a stable father figure in the home. A lot of them. I can't say most of them. I haven't talked to most of them. The ones I have talked to, it comes up again and again. Dad was either gone, either I never knew my dad, or mom and dad were divorced, something. Is often there, not a stable home. So how do I view the church? We have to view it as a haven of rest, a haven of protection, and worthwhile to invite every sinner here that we come in contact with. Anybody that has any interest, anybody that's searching, anybody that needs, and they need, the church is an answer. The church is the tool, the body. No, it's not salvation in itself. But yes, salvation leads to the church and is in and through the church. How can we separate it? So, how do I view the world? Lost. How do I view the church? An answer. How do I view my God-given abilities? Do I believe that I can do something? How many of you believe that you can do something? Hopefully nobody here believes they can do nothing. If you believe that, you're wrong. With the help of God, you can do something. You are called to do something. And we know that there's not this yardstick, this ruler that we're all measured by. How high are you on this yardstick of production for God? No, it's not all about. It's not about that. Jesus clearly told us in the parable of the pounds, in the parable of the talents, in the one illustration, all three were given the same amount, 1 pound, whatever a pound meant in their times or whatever the English thought of as a pound, what they applied to the word, original word. Sorry, I don't know what the original word was in that text. Some of you probably know that. But they were all given the same amount. And one produces 10 more and receives praise. The next one produces 5 more and receives praise. Only did half as much production as the other one, and receives the same commendation from the master. He didn't say, "Well, only a 50% producer. Did you see what your brother produced?" None of that. He did what he could. He brought what was, and the master was pleased. And God is pleased when we try and our efforts are for him. The other one, who had received also 1 pound but produced nothing, that was the whole problem. The attitude, "I can't, so I won't. Why try? I'm nothing." That did not suit the master. That was not good enough. Him looking at his own abilities and deciding, "I can't," was what angered the master. The master knew he could. It was a bad attitude that the master wrote off and said, "You're worthless." We can all try. We can all learn. We should never stop learning. And we can all grow. The Bible tells us to grow in the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Grow, grow, grow. Never stop growing. We have never reached, never imagine yourself to have reached the last height and now I know it all, or now I've attained, or now I've done enough, or no. We press toward the mark, and we keep pressing. We keep pressing. Retirement is death. Remember that. Retirement for the Christian is death. Until then, there's work. There's work to do. There's a calling. There's a needy world. That needy world is not going to go away. You're never going to see the day when everyone is saved and we have nothing left to work for. That will not happen. But we will see an end. There will be a rest when there will be no more effort. No more effort for this kind of work. Until then, we're called to be ambassadors and truth and light and bringing others to Christ. Is there a call? Are we waiting on a call? What kind of calling did the Samaritan have? He looked, he saw, he knew what needed to be done, and he did it. Where was his calling? Did he have one? If you love, you have a calling. If you don't love, there's still a call there. But truly, truly, if you were saved, you love. You have to love. If you don't love, I think you don't have God. God is love. If we have him, we have love. The Good Samaritan says, had compassion on him. He saw the problem. He didn't wait on a calling. He saw the problem. He did what he could. He tried. And he succeeded. Had he done this before? Probably not. Probably not. We read a lot of people that had a problem with a call in the Old Testament. We think of Jonah. A specific call. No, I'm not going. I don't want to go. I'm not going. God changed his mind. Don't wait for a whale to come swallow you before you change your mind. Jonah decided that was no fun at all. The next time the call came, he went. Moses was called. No, I can't do that. I can't speak. I can't go. God's like, you can go. Moses refused until God became angry. Moses finally went. And with God's help, he was a great success, in spite of his thoughts that I can't. And then we have Gideon. Gideon was called. Gideon's like, what, me? I'm not the man for this job. Why, my family is nothing. I've come from nowhere. What do you mean? Yes, you. If God is with us, we're on the right side. We don't have to produce 10. 5's good enough. We just do. Do what we can. Get the man on a beast and get him to the church. Go ye into all the world. Let your light so shine. Men may see your good works and glorify God that's in heaven. Loving is doing. Loving is doing. What does the Bible say? If I say I love my brother, but I see he has need, and I shut up my compassion away from him, how can I say the love of God dwells in me? I can't. So really, what is mission? What's our missionary worldview? The world is lost. The church is the answer. Jesus Christ is the answer. The church is the vehicle that helps bring him in. And more than the vehicle, the bride of Christ. And who am I? Is there a call? There's a call for everybody. Go ye into all the world. And I really like the way he said it in Acts 1:8. I'm going to end with that. I like the description here because it seems to cover everything and everywhere. But ye shall receive power. If you're going to turn there, I'll wait a second or two. Acts 1, verse 8. But ye shall receive power. After that, the Holy Ghost is come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses unto me. And this is what I like. Both in Jerusalem, your hometown. That's where they were from. You'll be a witness in Jerusalem. And in all Judea, the home state, if you will. And in Samaria, the next state, farther away from home, involving some foreigners now. Some people that are different than us. We'll talk about cultures in another message. And unto the uttermost part of the earth, not leaving anything out. Every imaginable spot. That's where we're supposed to be witnesses. Hometown and onward. I'm not here to tell you you have to head for a foreign country. Not at all. Some of you might. Some of you won't. Maybe y'all will, but that would be extremely probably out of proportion with percentages. We're called to witness right here. We're called to live a life that's exemplary and an attraction to others to come to the Lord right where you are, right now. Right where you work, where you go to school, whatever you do, you can be of service and a servant right there. And yes, there are other needs, and some of you will move on to other needs. But there are needs everywhere. So don't wait to start serving until there's a call and we go somewhere on some mission. You're a missionary right now, exactly where you are and the people you're around. Instead of waiting for a call, look for something to do. Look for a way to serve God where you are right now. He who seeks shall find. That probably covers more territory than we sometimes think. Seek and you shall find. Open your eyes and you will see the man in the ditch. You have a place to take him. And you will, if you love. Get your heart fully engaged with loving other people. And you will love God as you love others. And you will be a great missionary. Let's kneel for prayer.